Hey, my friends, welcome back to The Rush. It's Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause rolling with you. We're about to bring in Brett House for our Dollars and Cents segment. But Richard, quickly before that, before the break, we were talking to Aiden Wooters, a grad student at Carleton U, all about International Bat Appreciation Day. It was a fascinating chat, but can you imagine getting Aiden and Dan Riskin in a room together? I would just watch them talk and it would be amazing.
No, never cross the streams. It was too much enthusiasm. There would be too much enthusiasm.
Too much bat
content. Something would happen. Something supernatural would happen.
It would cause a rift in the space-time continuum.
I am not completely unconvinced that that wasn't Dan Riskin changing his voice.
In disguise.
Yeah.
Well, we'll never know. We're about to have another fascinating chat because it's time for Dollars and Cents with Brett House. Of course, Brett is a professor of professional practice in economics at Columbia Business School and a fellow with the Public Policy Forum, the Monk School, and Massey College. Brett, thanks for being with us.
Hey, it's great to be back.
So let's talk about yesterday's federal budget. There is so much to talk about here. What is the first thing that jumped out to you as you were listening to Chrystia Freeland and the coverage of the budget yesterday? Like, what was the top line item from your perspective as an economist?
Well, the big item is the increase in spending, much of which is going into things Canadians have said they want. So the government and the budget is reflecting a lot of polling, a lot of priorities in the newspaper pages and other spots where these things have been identified. And it's coming at the cost of eating up a bit of a windfall the government's received as a result of better than expected growth coming into the end of 2023 and 2024, which puts a little more money in their hands than they had under previous projections.
One of the things that they are proposing is a 5,000 job cut. Now, it would be starting in next year, and it would be sort of mostly through attrition and that kind of thing. But, you know, that seemed to me to be fairly empty. And I say that because everyone, when they are trying to justify a new budget or when they're just starting at the beginning of their mandate, says, we're going to drain the swamp. We're going to not replace people, reduce our numbers by attrition, and we'll save a ton of money here. But there doesn't ever seem to be a way to drain the swamp properly. It never really seems to work all that effectively. Do you think that this is just an empty promise with a big number attached to it?
Well, it's not a big number, even if it is a fulsome promise, because there are about 275,000 public service employees in Canada. So 5,000 is a drop in the bucket. It's the kind of reduction you would expect to see naturally if you just not even fully stop hiring, but throttle back on hiring a bit. So I think that's more of a talking point than a really substantive move.
And obviously, Brett, a big part of the budget, housing, it's one of the hot button political issues at every level of government right now. So of the $52.9 billion, almost $53 billion in new spending over the next 5 years, $8.5 billion of that is focused on new spending for housing. What plank of their housing plan that they revealed in the budget caught your attention most?
Well, there are two big pieces to what is the most ambitious housing plan we've seen in years. It's worth remembering we need such an ambitious plan because previous governments did very little on this file, and previous years of this government did not as much as they needed to do. There are two big pieces, as I mentioned, one around making more houses built, getting supply up, and those are really laudable measures. Those attempts to work with provinces and municipalities to get some of the red tape, to get some of the barriers to building out of the way and get construction going, particularly by using federal lands to a greater extent. I think these are really innovative and smart moves that a whole range of policy analysts and economists have been calling for years. Where I have a lot more skepticism is on the things that sound really good, that are getting a lot of press, like 30-year mortgage amortizations, a number of other things that are going to make it easier to borrow money or easier to find financing in other ways, but effectively are just going to push up demand. And in the absence of more supply, they aren't going to make housing more affordable. They're going to make it more expensive in the short term. So this is a supply problem. And I think the emphasis needs to be squarely on building homes, not on stoking demand in an already tight market where you've got a deficit of dwellings.
You're listening to Brett House, professor of professional practice in economics at Columbia Business School and a fellow with the Public Policy Forum, the Monk School, and Massey College. Chrystia Freeland says that many of the things outlined in this budget will unlock the doors to the middle class for more Canadians. Do you see that in this budget somewhere?
There are bits and pieces, and I think this government, since its very first day, has been focused on the middle class almost ad nauseum. I'm actually more concerned about whether it improves a lot of people who are on much more constrained circumstances. Mm-hmm. Those are typically the people we haven't seen as much focus on rhetorically, but who have been hurting the most. Nevertheless, everyone's felt their budget squeezed, and you know, some of the investments in pharmacare are going to be helpful to a range of people. The affordable daycare that's being continued, the move to dental care, these are all going to be things that help a lot of the household budgets.
I want to ask you about the increase to the capital gains tax in a second as well. But before that, the other segment of the population that the government is saying this budget is very heavily focused on are millennials and Gen Z or Gen Z. It's not surprising. We've seen some political support amongst younger people bleeding away from the Liberals and actually toward the Tories, which is a bit of a surprise historically. But in terms of focusing on millennials and Gen Z, do you see a lot in this budget for them, Brett, or is that just political messaging?
Well, there's a ton of rhetorical focus there. You see Gen Z and millennials mentioned many times. You see boomers mentioned many times. And maybe I'm being overly sensitive, but as a Gen Xer, I don't think we got a mention at all in the budget, which is typical for a smaller sandwich generation. Look, almost all of the housing demand support is focused on younger homebuyers. But the problem is, as I mentioned, I don't think it's going to make housing cheaper just because it's easier to get financing. In fact, it's going to keep it expensive and probably more so.
And obviously a lot of coverage as well about the increase to the capital gains tax. It'll go up to 2/3 from the current 50% taxable portion. This is for capital gains over $250,000. And this will not apply, though, to sales of primary residences. Is that right, Brett?
Yeah, so let's be clear. It's not an increase in the rate of taxation. Mm-hmm. It is an increase in the capital gains, which are the profits that people make on selling an asset. So, you know, a second home, stocks or bonds that you may sell, if you make a profit on them, this is a tax that applies to those gains. And for individuals, it doesn't set in until you have made $250,000 or more in a year. So this is clearly targeted at relatively wealthy people and is not going to be relevant for the vast swath of Canadians.
We just have about a minute left. The deficit is projected at $39.8 billion compared with $40 billion last year. I mean, they're astronomical numbers. Are these numbers that Canadians need to be freaked out about?
I don't think they need to be freaked out at all, because when you look at a share of GDP, our annual income that we use in part to finance the deficit, that ratio is still amongst the lowest numbers we've had in 40 or 50 years. It's very low against our industrialized country peers. But the concern is that it is up from where it's been the last few years, and it's not coming down, despite the fact that we have exited from emergency pandemic conditions. We should really be doing things to try to get it down a little lower, to leave ourselves some cushion, some emergency room if we hit a bump in the road again. But that requires tough choices, not just from the government, but from Canadians. We have said we want things like more spending on the military, mm-hmm. more spending on pharmacare. There has to be a choice involved there. And if the government isn't making the choice, then Canadians have to help them make the choice, because ultimately they're responding to Canadians' stated needs.
Brett, thanks. Thanks very much.
Great to talk.
That was Brett House, professor of professional practice in economics at the Columbia Business School and a fellow with the Public Policy Forum, the Monk School, and Massey College, walking us through the budget. Of course, we're going to continue on this with Jagmeet Singh, leader of the NDP, is going to stop by in the next segment, and we will talk budget, his reaction to it, and whether or not he's on board with it. I'm Richard Krause. That's Teddy Wilson. You're listening to The Rush on News Talk 1010. Stay with us.